Now, a little while ago, I was joined by Tony Fosgate, who's undertaken some truly breathtaking travels to such places as the Whitewater Rapids in Colorado, the Cresta Run, and the North Pole. And he's gone on so far as to put all his experiences down on paper. Now, many of his travels, I would have to say, are not for the faint-hearted. And last time he was with us, he gave us a brief glimpse of what it was like to go down the Whitewater Rapids. And this time, Tony is going to tell us about his trip to the North Pole. So welcome again to Phoenix FM, Tony.
Thank you very much.
Now, be honest, the North Pole is probably one of the last places I consider going to a holiday. So what was it that attracted you to go to such a wild and hostile place?
Well, I've got to admit, it's not your usual sort of holiday destination, is it? But it's doable, and it's doable even now for the average tourist. You think about, and they reckon about 1 million people visit the Arctic region every year, and up to about 1,000 or more people actually reach the North Pole. So you can get there, and more people are actually going there. So let's start off thinking that this is just a ridiculous thing that, you know, very few people have been there. More and more people are standing on the top of the Earth. And I think there's a certain fascination about going to the end of the Earth and actually standing on the top where the Earth spins on its axis. And still relatively few people have done it. So you're also a member of quite a select club.
Bet the ice cream's good there.
Now, it doesn't melt.
Now, you say you describe yourself as a nervous man, but were you actually nervous about going to any of these wild and remote places?
Well, the Arctic is very big and it's very cold. And it is, in fact, the Arctic basin is about the size of Russia. It's just a huge expanse, obviously, of ice with very low temperatures. It's a very harsh landscape. Really, you can only travel during the springtime, so there's a certain short period in the year. The other thing about it, I suppose, is it's very difficult to get your head around it because it is literally flat and white. And the landscape itself is really quite disorientating. It's featureless, and it's easy, obviously, to get lost. The other thing is that you've got no sense of depth perception, so it's difficult to judge distances and all the rest of that. It's a kind of area that will drive you crazy, even if you're not crazy already, to actually go there. But it does depend how you do it, and there are various ways of doing it. You can do it the hard way, which very adventurous and fit people do, and they pull a sled, or they go on skis. Or you can do it the very cushy way, of course, with the big icebreakers. Now, they're more like floating hotels, and they just carve their way up to the North Pole. I suppose I went somewhere in the middle, and I actually flew there in the end. And the way that you do it, there are various ways of doing it, but essentially I flew to Norway. And then up to northern Norway, and then you go beyond the northern tip of Norway, and you go about another 600 miles north, and somewhere between halfway between the tip of northern Norway and the North Pole is the Svalbard Islands. And they're Norwegian islands, but they're the kind of last staging post, the last bit of civilization before you actually get to the North Pole. And from there, the Russians will take you in a jet, an Antonov 74, which is probably about the hardest jet that there is for extreme conditions, will fly you up to, they have an ice base, which is floating on one of the ice floes near the North Pole. And then they will helicopter you in and they will drop you on the North Pole and you'll walk around for a couple of hours and then they will take you back and you reverse your steps. So that's the way that I did it.
Now, but in your book, you said that you'd hardly set foot in the place before you found that your flight had been delayed by a crack in the runway and that the entire runway was actually made of ice.
Well,
so you had to do something, didn't they?
Yes. Well here's the thing. I mean, the Arctic is another world entirely. And, you know, if you get very far north, obviously there's no permanent runways. So essentially they make them out of ice. And basically what they do is they get some snow shovels and they dig out a runway and then they hose it down with water and they make it nice and shiny and slippery. And amazingly, you do land a 20 ton jet on that. And so
I hope it doesn't
give way. That's how they do it. But what I really didn't understand before I went to the Arctic is that, of course, the ice moves around.
Yeah.
So you create a runway out of ice. Well, the ice starts to move around. You get a crack in it. Because remember that we're not on land. It's all Arctic Ocean.
Yep.
And what you're doing is standing on a bit of ice, just floating on the top of that ocean. So that's what happens. And it cracks up, and so do you, waiting while they mend it, basically.
And how long has it been possible for tourists to visit the North Pole? You say that quite a lot of people go there.
Yeah, I mean, increasing numbers of people go there. But I suppose probably since the 1990s, the breakup of the Soviet Union, I think probably the first Arctic tourist was an American guy who paid the ex-Soviet Union some hard currency in 1990-something to hitch a ride on one of their icebreakers. And since then, there are a lot of commercial operators now who will fly you in or get you on an icebreaker. So, you know, it's opening up more and more, like the South Pole, as a tourist destination.
Did the flight itself, did they serve food or show a movie or anything?
Strangely, no. It's very, very functional. I mean, you do have seats in the flight,
oh,
but basically half of it is just cargo space.
Yeah,
it's a load of people with their skis and their sleds and their equipment looking very serious at the back.
Yes.
While the rest of us who don't ski and all the rest of it just have quite a hard ride, really.
Now, when they flew you in, they flew you, as you said, the Svalbard group of islands.
Yeah.
And there's what's the capital there? They fly you in.
Oh, the capital, yes, is called Longyearbyen. That is the
Longyearbyen.
Capital. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but it's something like that. And that's the capital, and it's like a one street town.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically on the margins of civilization, really. It's the last sort of bit of civilization before you then get into complete emptiness before the North Pole. It has a lot of character. It's got a co-op. It's got the most northerly co-op in the world. It's got some nice pubs, but it is on the margins, as I say, of human existence. One of the things I did like about, Longyearbyen, was that in a kind of reversal of inner city logic, you are required to carry a gun. You're required to be armed because, of course, polar bears, outweigh the human population by about 2 to 1. And sometimes they sort of wander into town and that sort of thing.
And into the co-op.
So, so this implies. Yeah. It is just an amazing place. It's like the rest of the Arctic. It's slightly bonkers, really.
But they have pizza and postcards and all that sort of thing.
Oh, they do, yes. Yeah. So it's kind of a tourist area, but it's the kind of staging post where if you think about everyone who comes in who wants to get on that flight to the North Pole or wants to ski there, because some people do, and they all come in, they bundle into this town, and basically it's all concentrated in the time frame where you can go to the Arctic.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's too cold. Remember that 6 months of the year is complete darkness anyway.
Yes.
And then the summer, the ice begins to break up and melt. So you've got a few weeks, basically, sort of March, late March, early April, where you've got all these people piling in and running through in their quest to get to the North Pole.
Now, when you get to this place, and you mentioned that sometimes they have to redo the runway because
they did it a few times. I can tell you.
If you're delayed there, what happens? Presumably there's no terminal or anything. You can go and have a coffee in or anything.
Well, I mean, Svalbard itself is a holiday destination
in
its own, and they have all that they're geared up for the tourists, so you can go dog sledding, snowmobiling, all that sort of thing. You go to the east coast, which is the lair of the bear. Except when I went there, there were no bears. They were very shy.
They
probably wandered into town when I went out. So there's lots of things to do, but you do eventually run out, and you need a firearm if you want to go past the city limits. I tried to obtain one, but I was asked, "Have you ever shot a gun before?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, you're probably going to harm yourself more than the bear then." So I gave that idea. But basically, I was delayed for almost 2 weeks while there was a blizzard up at the ice base. and the runway kept cracking up and all the rest of it. Yeah, went on for quite a long time.
Now, I mean, in the book, you mentioned all of the descriptions of the episode when you're stuck trying to get into the North Pole. And that in itself is worth it. The book, it's such a good read. It's your descriptions of that are just fantastic. But we now need to get to the pole itself. So when you finally arrived and disembarked from the plane, what do you find?
Well, you find some tents, basically, because these tents are screwed into an ice floe that's sort of drifting around. And the Russians set up this base. Basically, it's for scientific research, but it's also a kind of a conduit for all us tourists who wander through. Mm-hmm. And essentially, that's what it is. It's a lot of tents. Obviously, it's very temporary structure. Yes. It's there for a few weeks every year.
I hope they're heated.
It is, I have to say, it's tropical heating. I mean, really? You wander in there, and they've set up the heating very well. I don't know, they have fire-breathing dragon or something in the basement. I don't know what they have. But it's like you go from minus 30 outside, and you go into one of their tents, and it's just like walking into the tropics. And a sleeping tent was marvellous. In fact, everyone kind of is down to their shorts and their top because it's so hot at night. Borneo is the name of the ice base.
Right.
Not to be confused with Borneo, the tropical paradise. But it is a bit like that inside it. So you're there for a night, and then in the morning you look outside and you see, well, there's helicopters outside. Mm. And these helicopters take you on the final hop to the North Pole, and that would take about half an hour. And they land you down there. They're very tentative in where they land. They probe it before they land, just in case you're going to go through the ice. And then they set you down, and you wander around, and you look at, and you think, well, I'm at the North Pole. And of course, a minute later, you've drifted on the ice away from the North Pole for a time you are there. And you know you're there because everyone's GPS crashes, basically. Because the software is trying to calculate an infinite singularity, the point on the Earth's surface, which is zero. So at that point, you know, right, pretty much on the North Pole. So down you get and you wander around. It is obviously the most desolate place on Earth, apart from all the other tourists who are wandering around. So it does get quite crowded, in fact. But I've got a picture of myself at the pole, and it's like there's this kind of orange glow on the horizon. Yeah. Loads of chunks of jagged ice, overcast, and the sun is like a little fuzzy ball, which, of course, stays up there for six months of the year. I mean, it's just an amazing thing. And it's like when you get back to the UK, people say, well, where have you been? I've been to the North Pole.
And they say, where have you really been?
What was there? Like they're expecting McDonald's or something. Yeah. But obviously there is nothing there. And then you have to explain, why have you gone to somewhere where there's nothing there? But as I said at the beginning, it's kind of an intangible thing. And it's very exciting to actually get to that point. There was a lot of waiting around, but it was worth the wait.
Well, while you're standing doing this sort of walk round the North Pole, what happens if the ice moves the helicopter away from where you are?
Well, hopefully you're on the same bit of ice.
Right.
So you're all going together, like you're all on the same raft, just moving around. So that's the idea, but it's crazy. You just got to try and get your head around it.
So what do you think is the future of tourism to the pole?
Well, of course, global warming is the big issue. Mm-hmm. I think we've all heard about the ice shrinking and at an alarming rate.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that the North Pole has a lot to do with the weather on the rest of the world as well. I mean, one person has called it the planet's air conditioner. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it was. So people, more and more people are going there, and they're interested in going there, and that's great, but that represents a challenge in itself. But obviously, you know, the ice is disappearing, so what's going to happen? And the idea of actually boating to the North Pole, which, you know, was just fiction or just ridiculous, it could become in a few years reality. So we've got to take care and we've got to watch out, which is the same for the rest of the planet, of course.
Okay, Tony, look, thanks very much for all that. Time now to remind us the title of your book, and where you can get it.
Right, okay, well, it's called Satan's Gut, Sausage Boats and Ice Kisses, The Adventure Travel Notes of a Nervous Man, and it's out on Amazon. It's out on paperback or the Kindle version. Yeah. If you want, the Kindle is only $2.99. Fabulous, fabulous bargain, obviously. You know, just look in adventure travel or just type in the search Satan's Gut and you should be able to hit the right page.
Well, as I said at the start of our chat, this is a thoroughly good read. It's guaranteed to get you out of yourself. There's a lot of humour in there, and who knows, it might just encourage you to spread your wings and follow in Tony's footsteps. Although yeah, I have to say it wouldn't for me. Anyway, thanks for coming in,
all right,
Tony.
Thank you very much.
And we look forward to your return for the third part of your exploit, so dealing with the Cresta Run, which I think is next month sometime.
Yes, it is. Look forward to that. Yeah, thank you so much.
It's our pleasure, believe me.